Chapter 3. For the moment, my situation was tolerable. Dr. Mengele expected me to perform the work of a physician. I would probably be sent to some German city as a replacement for a German doctor who'd been drafted into military service and whose functions had included pathology and forensic medicine. Moreover, I was filled with hope by the fact that, by Dr. Mengele's orders, I had not been issued a prisoner's burlap, but an excellent suit of civilian clothes. It was already past midnight, but my curiosity kept me from feeling tired. I listened carefully to the barracks chief's every word. He knew the complete organization of the KZ, the names of the SS commanders in each camp section, as well as those of the prisoners who occupied important posts. I learned that the Auschwitz KZ was not a work camp, but the largest extermination camp in the Third Reich. He also told me of the selections that were made daily in the hospitals and the barracks. Hundreds of prisoners were loaded every day onto trucks and transported to the crematoriums only a few hundred yards away. And my interjection here, at what point will it dawn that his purpose is to bear witness? Quite early on, I suspect, and not just to justify collaboration in exchange for his wife's and daughter's lives. It's quite impossible to believe that once you've read the entire book. Continuing with Auschwitz. From his tales, I learned of life in the barracks. 800 to 1,000 people were crammed into the superimposed compartments of each barracks. Unable to stretch out completely, they slept there both lengthwise and crosswise, with one man's feet on another's head, neck, or chest. Stripped of all human dignity, they pushed and shoved and bit and kicked each other in an effort to get a few more inches space on which to sleep a little more comfortably. For they did not have long to sleep. Reveille sounded at 3 in the morning. Then guards, armed with rubber clubs, drove the prisoners from their beds, quote unquote. Still half asleep, they poured from the barracks, elbowing and shoving, and immediately lined up outside. Then began the most inhumane part of the KZ program. Roll call. The prisoners were standing in rows of 5. Those in charge arranged them in order. The barracks clerk lined them up by height, the taller ones in front and the shorter behind. Then another guard arrived, the day's duty guard for the section, and he, lashing out with his fists as he went, pushed the taller men back and had the short men brought up front. Then, finally, the barracks leader arrived, well-dressed and well-fed. He, too, was dressed in prison garb, but his uniform was clean and neatly pressed. He paused and haughtily scanned the ranks to see if everything was in order. Naturally, it was not, so he began swinging with closed fists at those in the front rank who were wearing glasses and drove them into the back rank. Why? Nobody knew. In fact, you didn't even think about it, for this was the KZ, and no one would even think of hunting for a reasonable explanation for such acts. And my interjection again. But is not this unquestioning obedience to authority in the face of the irrational what we do every day? Every day we send our garbage to a dump and it gets filled up. Every day we participate in a system that's enslaving us. That's insane. But we don't question it, because power has us all by the short hairs. Auschwitz is just the most extreme example of it. Continuing. This sport continued for several hours. They counted the rows of men more than 15. Wait, I'm sorry. I wasn't really focused. I have to say that again, because I'm realizing I didn't quite take it in. This sport continued for several hours. hours, hours. They counted the rows of men more than 15 times, from front to back and back to front, and in every other possible direction they could devise. If a row was not straight, the entire barracks remained squatting for an hour, their hands raised above their heads, their legs trembling with fatigue and cold. For even in summer, the Auschwitz dawns were cold, and the prisoners' light burlap served as scant protection against the rain and cold. But winter and summer, roll call began at 3 a.m. and ended at 7 when the SS officers arrived.